The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Connect with ultra-fast speeds and our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home.
In his 50 years as a journalist, Bob Woodward has written 20 books and covered 9 presidents. The scope and the depth of his work have earned him a unique place in politics and journalism as perhaps the most enduring chronicler of American presidents. At either end of his front row seat to American history are two of the most divisive American presidents in generations, one Richard Milhouse Nixon and one Donald J. Trump. His latest book, Rage, is fascinating, which you've all either read or you heard about by now. It's another bestseller, no surprise at all. What a pleasure it is to welcome to the program Bob Woodward. Good morning, Bob, and thanks for your time this morning.
Morning.
What did you think of Donald Trump before he took up residence in Pennsylvania Avenue?
Well, you know what? I spent for this book about 9 hours interviewing him at the end of last year and this year, and it's very clear he sees the world very differently. He thinks he's done a good job fighting the coronavirus. He thinks he's done more for black people in the United States than anyone other than Abraham Lincoln. He feels he's done a great job appointing judges, and he feels he talks about the economy the way it was before the virus and the way he thinks it's going to be. But of course, in those four areas, there is lots of failure, particularly on the virus. I think he's just, he once told me when I asked him what the job of the president is, he said it's to protect the people, and he's failed in that miserably.
I suppose when you are heading into confront this presidency with this particular book, Rage, you had a good idea of what sort of a person you're dealing with. When you consider the amount of time you spent talking to him, 18 interviews, that's a lot of tape. What do you make of the man rather than the president?
Well, as a reporter, I'm more interested in his behavior and his attitudes. And as I said to him, I always think the spine, the core of the American presidency, is the policy. In other words, what he's actually doing. So I tend to focus on that. Mm. But behind that is this man, Donald Trump, who has stirred probably the biggest controversy, certainly since Nixon, in this country. And Trump and I got into some shouting matches. He's not organized. A president needs to build a team of people, but he operates on impulse, and he sends out these tweets with major decisions. So it is a failure on his part to use the best people in the government and the best people in this country, and the failure is monumental.
Why is it, Bob, that the president told you that he always wanted to play the virus down? And why is it that he mocks Joe Biden for wearing a mask? And why is it that he calls Dr. Fauci, the most eminent scientist in the land, a clown? Why does he do this?
He does it because he's Trump, because he feels that he's got a particular insight into what people in this country want. Now, there is a certain base, maybe it's 40% of the country, I'm not sure what it is, that does feel that way. But he talks that way because he feels that way. And, of course, a president is a human being, but part of leading, part of being an adult is learning how to curtail some of those emotions. And Trump does not. He just lets it all hang out. And what he's done on the virus and the failure, like to listen to Dr. Fauci now, who's probably the most preeminent infectious disease specialist in the world, not just in the United States. The failure to wear a mask, which is, we now know, if they had done that beginning back in February, in the days after President Trump was warned explicitly about the coming pandemic, if they'd done some of these things in February, we might have control of the virus rather than the virus having control of us. What's going on in Ireland with the virus?
The virus in Ireland sees us, as of last night at midnight, on level 5, full lockdown for 6 weeks, Bob.
Wow. So, you know, there you are. People are living it.
Yes, but we also are looking to our health experts and indeed our government for guidance. And one is, by and large, trusting the other.
That's essential. And, you know, I wish the world luck on this. And as we get into the cold seasons, it's going to get worse, according to the doctors.
Bob, is it a New York Times reading, Democrat-loving, left-leaning comment to suggest that President Trump is without empathy?
Well, I found in my dealings with him and in the first book, Fear, I wrote on Trump that came out in 2018, he's capable of some empathy, but his focus is on himself as a political being and is somebody who has the emotions. So there's not a display of that. And, of course, there's so much contrary evidence. He says such cruel things about people. He literally, after he got the virus, was saying, you know, don't be obsessed about it. He feels better than he's ever felt in 20 years. And then he literally said a couple of days ago, it's a blessing from God that he got the virus. Now, there are 8 million families in this country who've had somebody close to them or somebody in their immediate family get the virus. That's 8 million people. And over 220,000 people dying in this country. And he should express remorse and sadness about that. But instead, he's on this emotional run that is beyond Orwellian.
In your book, In Rage, you get this sense that you are the ultimate, you forgive the analogy, but you're the ultimate fly on the wall in so many of these meetings, thanks to your contacts and what have you. And you get General Mattis, for example, or Dan Coats, the Director of National Intelligence at the time, kind of griping about Trump as being dangerous or unfit. But surely, Bob, the greatest fuel for tyranny is silence. And if these men felt that strongly about the man running your country, should they not have been less silent, them and most, if not all, of the Republican Party?
Well, it's particularly for people in the military. They don't want to say things publicly that will make it look like they've taken a political position. You know, I understand it, and we now know in the book in great detail exactly how Mattis, who was the Secretary of Defense for Trump the first 2 years, somebody respected, experienced general, was just at war with Trump for 2 years and finally resigned, couldn't take it, as I quote him in the book, saying that he had been asked to do lots of stupid things, but in the end, when Trump wanted to pull the few American troops out of Syria fighting ISIS, he felt that was felony stupid, and he quit.
Do you believe that Vladimir Putin has something, some dirt on Donald Trump?
What I report is that Dan Coats, who was the head of intelligence after 9/11, a Republican senator for 16 years, was going into retirement. Trump tapped him to take this job. Coates was very close to Pence, the vice president, and so Coates took the job and found, when they looked through all the top secret intelligence, they couldn't find anything to prove that Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, had some secret or illegal leverage on Trump, but they always suspected it because of the way Trump acts. I found it extraordinary that the head of intelligence would reach this conclusion because of Trump's behavior, because of his continuous kowtowing to Putin.
You said recently that Trump is assassinating the presidency.
Yeah, well, Trump is assassinating the presidency because, as we are, less than 2 weeks before the election here, Trump has made continuous statements that he will not accept a peaceful transfer of power. He has said we can't count on the electoral system, of course, which is the basis in any democracy for constitutional legitimacy for the President of the United States. He is assassinating the office and its responsibilities to make sure that democracy continues. And so now we're going to have an election. And when do we get the results? When are people going to accept the results? There's lots of mail-in voting. He's criticized that. I mean, already, I think 30 million people in this country have voted. The president should be the person organizing and making sure that it's a fair system. But for him to attack it so directly, I call it, yes, an assassination, because that's what it is.
I think that when the president refused to confirm a peaceful transfer of power, that was arguably the most frightening point of the presidency for a lot of people watching it.
Isn't it? I mean, I know there in Ireland, I mean, your system is, your politics has gone much more progressive. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And in this country with Trump, it is the opposite. But, you know, however you might label it, progressive or conservative, the job of the government is to look out for the people. And he has not done that. Government needs to have authority and authenticity. And for the president, in this way, to attack the very system is absolutely unbelievable, but that's the reality we're dealing with here.
A lot of us are watching this election so closely, Bob, even in Ireland, and wondering about the polls and the polling. I don't think we've ever been so keenly aware of what's happening. But the difficulty for us is that a lot of people were burned by what happened to Hillary Clinton and feel that the polls might be essentially a work of fiction.
Yes, I don't trust polls. And in fact, in one of the interviews with Trump, he cited some poll, and I said, "You don't believe polls, do you?" And he said, "No, he doesn't," because people will not speak honestly. There is no way you are going to credibly measure public opinion. And as you point out, in 2016, the polling was wrong. Kept saying that Hillary Clinton is going to win. Now, the really interesting thing going on now is the secret private polling of both the Republicans and the Democrats is trying to measure not just what people say, but the level of commitment to their candidate. And this inquiry establishes, but it's not, they're really not public about it, that Trump voters are sitting home and they're saying, "I am going to get to the polls for sure. I am going to make sure I vote." And There are a lot of Biden voters who are supportive of Biden, but that intensity that I am going to vote no matter what feeling is not as high. And if Biden's going to win, they're going to have to really get into making sure that people get to the polls. I do not think we know who's going to win. I indicate very skeptical of the polls. I think, as I said, Trump is skeptical of the polls, though he will cite them and distort them. And so we are going into a period where we don't know the outcome. We don't know how we're going to measure it accurately and whether the sitting president of the United States is going to accept the outcome. He's made it very clear he thinks it's going to be rigged because of all of this mail-in voting. And just think about it for a moment. Under our system, the election is November 3rd. The various states have indicated for days or maybe a week or longer are not going to be able to announce who won their state, Trump or Biden. But whatever, we have November, December, and most of January until a new president takes office or Trump takes office again. So that's 3 months that Trump is going to be president still have that extraordinary power of that office in this country. And having done reporting on 9 presidents, Nixon through Trump, that's 20% of the presidents we've had, that the concentration of power in the presidency has only gone up. And so Trump, by seizing control of the communication system in this country, I don't mean illegally, just by doing the unexpected and exercising his power, that he has probably more power than any president, certainly since Nixon.
Who will history be kinder to, Bob? Will it be kinder to Nixon or Trump?
It's a great question, and clearly Nixon was a criminal, and that's why his own political party, the Republican Party, forced him out of office and made it clear he didn't have the support, and so Nixon voluntarily resigned. In the case of Trump, the crimes have not been proven, but just look at the calamity of the Vietnam War to the United States. Maybe 58,000 people, soldiers, men and women in the military service died in that war. Now in the pandemic, we have 4 times that number that have died. I don't think Trump could have stopped all of the deaths, but he certainly could have organized the country and responded to the pandemic honestly. And the failure to meet that responsibility has led to a catastrophe. I think when history is written, what Trump's failure to heed the warnings he was given is going to be probably the story of the failure of the American presidency and the American system to nominate and elect someone who responsibly would carry out the duties of president. And Trump's actions are not only a calamity, but they're irresponsible. I think there's a moral dimension to all of this because of the depth and magnitude of the failure.
As we draw our conversation to a close, Bob, an Irish commentator said recently that we've had so much things and feelings towards America. We've had great sense of excitement and joy and gratitude in many ways, but we've never felt the emotion that seems to a lot of people feel towards America. People feel sorry for America. I never thought I'd see this day. You write yourself more recently that you're embarrassed for the president, but you're embarrassed for the country. What an extraordinary state of affairs, Bob.
Yes, it is. Trump has failed the people who support him, the people who didn't support him. He's failed the country. He has failed his political party, the Republican Party, and he's failed himself. And it is an embarrassment, and I'm not surprised to hear you report that people in Ireland feel pity for the United States. I mean, imagine that, you know, all of the economic strength we've had, the collective military and diplomatic strength that we've had to lead the world or participate in that leadership of making sure that we have alliances so we avoid wars. And now Trump has put all of that at risk. We don't know the outcome. You know, the next couple of weeks and the weeks after the election, as this hopefully gets sorted out, going to be one of the most monumental weeks in American history.
Can you do me a favor, Bob, as we've just entered lockdown in Ireland, could you give me a bit of hope, please? give us all a bit of hope in terms of, have you any optimism in you at all?
Yes. I mean, I think the people in this country are good. I think that the polarization that's political that has taken place, you know, maybe somebody can come in. Maybe if Joe Biden's elected, I think he has the temperament to know that you have to bring people together. I think if he's elected president, the first week he would invite Republican leaders to the White House and sit down and say, you know, we need to bury the hatchet, so to speak, on some of these issues and work together in a way for the public interest, because the public interest is what matters. And I think I've known him for decades. I think he has the capacity to not fight old wars and to move on and to put in place some programs and structure to heal, because a lot of healing is going to be required. If Trump's reelected, are we going to have more of the divisions and hostility and hate? I mean, there is just a hatefulness that is so contrary to the best traditions of our political system.
You know something, Bob Woodward, if it all goes pear-shaped, you and Elsa Walsh, your wife, can come to Ireland, live in Cork, and write another book. How about that?
Well, thank you. We were in Ireland last year visiting her family. Her parents came from County Cork. I know you know that.
Yeah.
And we visited some of her relatives there, and we went to the horse races. And, you know, as you know, Dublin and the area is one of the beauty spots of the world, and I hope we can return and not have to wear our masks.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you back in Ireland sometime soon. Bob, thank you so much. Not at all. Thank you for your time today. We wish you well, and here's to brighter days ahead.
Same to you, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's Bob Woodward, a remarkable figure in journalism and, dare I say it, history, talking to us this morning about his book, Rage. If, like me, you love American history and politics, Rage will be a very welcome addition to your bookshelf. A fascinating insight into an extraordinary time in American history. The text number is 51551.